hungry.
Me too.
Let's make a pizza.
Okay.
From New York City.
This is Dead Rat Pizza.
Who doesn't love pizza?
Don't stop, make it pop. DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'ma fight till we see the sunlight. Tick-tock on the clock, but the party don't stop, no.
Welcome to Dead Rat Pizza. Probably episode 3. I'm not sure I'm numbering these. I'm John Paul, and I'm barely conscious. I'm joined by Kyle and Noel. How you doing, Noel?
Hey, I'm Noel, and I am so conscious. You wouldn't believe how conscious I am right now.
Yeah? Are you astral projecting into the wired?
Yes.
I think that's what Lane's about. Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm in conscience, but I now I'm not on the toilet, so it's all okay, everybody.
What is in conscience? Did you just make that word up?
No, I was making a play off of incontinence. Come on.
Oh, I like it.
There
My
you go.
My goodness. I'm sorry for, you know, nobody can listen to this live, so you don't know that we started 45 minutes late. I have been getting up at like 4 in the morning every day this week because I'm shooting a movie in Jersey, which requires like a 2-hour commute in the morning. It's not great. I get up so early that Adult Swim is still on when I'm leaving for work. That sounds like I'm joking. Adult Swim is actually on more than Cartoon Network. It's on 13 hours a day. It goes until 6 in the morning, and I wake up and Bob's Burgers is playing most days.
Right. Yeah, I remember they really like closed in on that because now they have, what is it, Checkered Past that counts
yes.
as Adult Swim now?
Yes, technically Checkered Past is Adult Swim, so Adult Swim is 5 p.m. to 6 a.m. Don't let me complain. I love it. I watch it, but it sure feels weird when you turn the TV on as you're getting ready for work and Tugan and Birdie is on. But I can't complain too much because I have been working, which is great. Because 2023 was really rough for me with the strike of SAG and WGA. I'm definitely in support of them getting what they want, but it went on for a very long time, and I ran out of all of my money. So,
definitely. Yeah.
Now I've been doing this since the beginning of March, which is great. We're shooting until the middle of April. I had a really interesting conversation with my Lyft driver last night. It's common that we'll take a ride home just because we're so fucking tired. And this guy, he turns to me and he says, "Hey, man, have you heard of these non-binary people?" And I thought, oh boy, here we go.
Oh, God.
Here we fucking go. This guy's about to go on like a Ben Shapiro rant. But it turns out he was actually super excited to learn about a new approach to gender. And I was like,
wow.
How did I hit the jackpot? Uber driver, like, I thought I was just gonna have to like sit there in uncomfortable silence while this guy talked about how he wanted to set the world on fire, but he was so excited to tell me about non-binary.
That guy just like unironically going, "We live in a society
and I like it."
Yeah. He was just like
the most wholesome guy. And then he talked about how he has a drinking problem. And I was like, it's okay, man. You will be able to stop, probably.
There we go, yeah.
Yeah, that was just a very unique, a big difference from the time I got into an Uber and they were playing Joe Rogan. I gotta go. Yeah, so...
It's funny because, like, I had a conversation with my dad earlier in the week where he was just like, he's like, "Joe Rogan, he's one of those, like, right-wing guys." And I was like, honestly, it just seems like he's just, like, an idiot and he doesn't know what he believes in.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't listen to Joe Rogan, so I can't really comment on what his belief structure is. But I know that the people that do listen to him, I usually cannot stand.
Yeah, it's realistically, with Joe Rogan, I've listened to him before, and it's really just a matter of he has people on there, they say outlandish stuff, and he's just like so stupid that
he just doesn't question any of it.
Yeah, nah, like, well, yeah, you know, you might have a point there. Hey, you want to see how much I can bench, or some dumb shit like that?
It's the Elon Musk. Very interesting. Looking into it.
Very much.
Well, we got a comment on our last two episodes. It's pretty unusual that we get people that like our stuff enough to tell us. So I wanted to read this. This is from Chibi UFO. It says, "Hey JP, love the first episode of DRP. Listening to episode 2 right now while I do the dishes. Can't wait for episode 3. I love it. Thank you for listening. I remember when I started a podcast in 2008. All I wanted was the occasional can't wait for the next episode. It only took 20 years to get one of those. So thank you. What are we going to do today? We lost Noel last week before he could talk about Imagine Dragons, Like a Dragon. What are you playing?
Yeah, like Imagine Dragons. So,
like Imagine Dragons.
Yeah. So are you familiar with like the Yakuza games at all?
I know they exist, but I've never awesome. Played one.
Yes. Yeah, so anyway, they're a series of just like kick-ass action games from Sega. And yeah, recently with the last two, they made the big switch from it being like an action game, sort of beat 'em up style of game, to a turn-based RPG.
Nice.
And the reason they've done that is they've also switched protagonists. They've gone from the guy who was the main character for the last 7 games, Kazuma Kiryu. Yeah. To this new guy, Ichiban Kasuga, who is just, he's a former Yakuza who was raised in a brothel, and he loves Dragon Quest. It's like his favorite thing. He can't get enough of it. So he sees the world like it's a Japanese RPG.
Oh God, that's why it's called Like a Dragon.
Well, I mean, that's what the actual, the original title is. I think they just leaned into that and were like, let's make it official. Let's put a ring on it, you know?
You know what? Yeah, I never thought of it like that before because, yeah, the original, like, Japanese title wasn't Yakuza. It was like a it was Ryu Gagotoku, which translates to like a dragon.
Oh, okay.
And with this recent switchover protagonist, they just said, you know what, let's just call it Like a Dragon from now on.
So, okay, that makes a little more sense. I thought that was just like the subtitle of the game.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so like, yeah, I really feel like this last one, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, it might be one of my favorite games of all time.
All right.
It's so good. It's so good, and there's so much to do in there.
Yeah, like, those games are crazy long, like easily 100 hours if you're like doing even 80% of the game.
Right. You can go to Hawaii. You can do DoorDash.
Oh my God. Is this because they just put out a dub of a Yakuza game that had come out already? Is that this game? Or am
So that was the game that came out just before this. It was Like a Dragon, The Man Who Erased His Name, which is like technically the last game where they have Kazuma Kiryu in it.
Okay.
Because that's another thing about these games. I feel like they're the closest thing we have to like the Fast and the Furious escalation in video games.
Well, I know that they punch a tiger in one of those games. I remember listening to Fast Karate and thinking that they sounded really cool. I just never played them. I technically own one because I bought my PS4 used and it came with, I want to say it's called Yakuza Zero.
Okay,
oh,
yeah.
Shit. That's the one to play. So,
I mean, yeah, that's a solid one to start with. But yeah, like I always say, yeah, it is like a steady escalation, like similar to how like the Fast and the Furious movies are just about street racing, and now they're about like stopping a guy from blowing up the sun.
Nice.
With yeah. The car. Yeah. Whereas like with Yakuza, it started off as you're a Yakuza who just got out of prison and now you have to stop your old, like, your brother from trying to take over the clan. And now it's like, hey, Ichiban has to go to Hawaii to stop a cult from storing nuclear waste on a Hawaiian island. It's that insane.
And that's there's a great divide. I think it in terms of tone, the series has always been so good at like really serious main quest, you know, and everyone is like ride or die. Everyone's pulling guns on one another. And then you get to the side content and it'll be like, hey, I'm just trying out a job that I've never had before. And I'm going to be a, what do they call it? And it'll be like a cute girl wearing a maid dress. And she says, I'm going to punish men.
Oh, yeah.
Can you teach me how to do that, Kazuya? And then he'll be like, oh, I'm not really into S&M, but I guess I can tell you how to be a dom. Okay. And like, and it's the same game. And there's never a moment where you're like, this seems totally inconsistent. And every time you're just like, yep, of course he would do that. This is exactly who this character is. And it's happening now. And I am here for it.
Yeah, there are a lot of like fantastic little side stories like that. There's one where you have to help a kid sell lemonade at his lemonade stand so he can buy a tiara for his old teacher. There's one
this sounds like, because this reminds me a lot of Final Fantasy VII.
There we go. Yeah,
That it's got a really serious story, but everything else is fucking silly.
Well, yeah, like I said,
and it just works.
But it's heartfelt, right? That's what makes it ultimately just like you feel it and you're not mad about it and you're just on for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Character everywhere.
It's interesting you bring up Final Fantasy VII because I have a friend of mine who it took me a while to get to, because I did start playing Final Fantasy VII Remake and it took me a while to get to that because I always said I'm not a fan of the way they've changed the battle system because mm-hmm. I really like turn-based combat.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they changed that up is kind of like, turns me off. And I have this friend who was just like, well, hey, you know, you can't really do like turn-based combat with like these super hyper-realistic graphics. And I'm like, yes, you can. Cause look at Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. Cause it has a fantastic battle system.
I see what you're saying with that. And I agree, but I've grown to appreciate the Final Fantasy VII Remake battle system.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree too. Yeah, like after I actually sat down and really got to play it, I'm like, okay, I can live with this. Like, I still like the way things worked in the original VII, but
yeah,
I can get used to this. But yeah, as I was saying, like Dragon's battle system is very fantastic. You have a lot of it's very positioning based. So each character's turn, they have like a little sphere of influence that they can move to.
Oh, is it like a strategy RPG?
No, it's more like a traditional turn based RPG. It's just that you can like move your characters on the space. It's more similar to like let's say Grandia or something like that.
I'm going to look up Grandia. I've never played Grandia.
Yeah, where you can, like, move your guys as well as, like, attack with them. But, yeah. But the fun part about that is, let's say you're within your character's, like, sphere of movement is, like, a chair. And then you hit, like, regular attack. They have the option to just, like, pick up that chair and whack somebody over the head with it.
That's awesome.
It is. It's so awesome. And it's so fun to do. And they have like team attacks where like a guy will trip somebody up and then another one will do a drop kick on them.
So I need to play this game once I finish Final Fantasy is what I'm hearing.
Oh, hell yeah. It also has a job system. Like I said, because the guy loves Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the jobs will be all like, because he's in Hawaii, they have jobs where it's like, you could be a fire eater or a hula dancer or a ninja. And like, I don't know, fire dancer is like one of the best jobs. It's so good. Because you can like heal, you can buff dudes, you have like this spitting fire attack that can like set a bunch of guys on fire. It's fantastic.
This is making me think of Way of the Samurai for some reason. I don't know if you ever played those games. I
played Way of the Samurai 4.
I just found out there was a 4 when I Googled this. I played 1 and 3, and they are very silly games.
But yeah, like similar to how Kyle said, it's very crazy how you have just the dichotomy between like a really serious story and then just like really wacky side shit, because there's the game itself has this very like, it has a nice story. It feels kind of unfinished, but the main theme of the story is, so if you've kept up to date with like the news over in Japan, like for the last 4 or 5 years, Yakuza have kind of been slowly being phased out just because like the laws have changed so much where it's like there's no benefit to even like being in a Yakuza family. Because let's say you go to jail for something and you get out, you're not able to get like a job, rent an apartment, or do anything for like a number of years. And so they focus on that for a major part of the story. So the theme of the story is like, should these guys be allowed to like redeem themselves or work their way back up, considering that they have this criminal past? And that goes into like some very interesting like philosophical places. But then at the same time, there's like a side quest where, you know, you gotta be a Pokemon master. Cause like the enemies in the game, you can literally capture them and add them to like your legally distinct from Pokemon team and face off against the legally distinct from the Elite Four and become the legally distinct from Pokemon champion.
I'm loving everything I'm hearing, because as I've been playing Final Fantasy, I keep thinking like, I want more RPGs to be like this, where like they're not afraid to not take themselves seriously. Cause I feel like so many video games are just like, rawr, just like, I'm so serious. And I just want to like, you know, like I love Elden Ring. But there's nothing silly about Elden Ring. It is just like 100% takes itself seriously the entire time.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a right or wrong. I mean, you say that about the Elden Ring games, but you know, I do think that in something like Ghost of Tsushima or Elden Ring, where it's like that setting, I think it's fine for it to be.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I want another game that is spiritually similar to Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Okay. And shoot, if that didn't like get you excited, this definitely will. I really feel like the Yakuza games are the closest we'll ever get to like game writing that is similar to like Kazuo Koike's, because in Like a Dragon, you fight a giant shark. You fight a giant squid. One of the penultimate villains is is like a former mafioso who ends up like the leader of this religious cult. And people keep mentioning that like he's been around for the past 70 years, but he does not look like he should be like over 100.
Oh my God.
And that is, it's never explained why he doesn't look 100.
Wait, now you say Kazuo Koike, but I feel like you mean Kisuke Itagaki. So this all sounds like Grappler Baki stuff.
You know what?
I'm on board either way. This game sounds incredible.
Right?
Is there anything else that you want to share about, like, a dragon imagine buildings? I don't know.
Imagine buildings. Let's see. Nah, I'd say that's it. I really think it's just like a must buy if you love JRPGs.
I've heard a lot of people compare it to Shenmue, but I never played Shenmue.
It is the inheritor of Shenmue's legacy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily do, like, because I think the thing that still sets Shenmue apart is it has that dedication to it being all in real, like, quote unquote real time.
Right. Yeah.
Everything being diegetic in a way that Yakuza is like a evolution, kind of a more user-friendly version. It loses some of the depth of Shenmue, but like if you're looking for a Shenmue, like Yakuza and / Like a Dragon are as close as you're gonna get today.
Do those games ever get remade? Because I would love to play them, but I know don't
they have a working Dreamcast.
So like, oh, Shenmue, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Shenmue's like available on about everything, right?
Yeah, you can get it on PlayStation or PC or anything. But they're not remakes. They're just, I think they're remasters.
Okay. Right.
But a lot of the charm is from it being that Dreamcast aesthetic. Like, if you were to do it with modern graphics, it wouldn't be that. So I think it's a good compromise.
Very nice.
Yeah. I was watching a guy play Illbleed earlier this morning. And I was like,
I don't know what that is.
It's a Dreamcast, like, horror game that was known for being really wacky.
Oh yeah, this looks fun. I really liked the Dreamcast, but by the time I got one, it had already been killed off. I got it because I was 10 and didn't have a lot of money, and the Dreamcast was $100 and games were $5. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
I mean, the Dreamcast was very cool. I can't deny that.
Yes, it was very cool.
I did not have one, but I had a cousin who had one, and whenever I would go over to his house, I'd be like, holy shit, this is so cool. The memory cards have little games on them.
Oh my God, yeah. I remembered the other big piece of news that I was going to mention. Kotaku is essentially dead.
Yes.
I don't know if
really
kept up with this. So
no,
apparently the people in charge, like the owners, which is probably some like hedge fund company, said they want to start focusing on guides instead of news. And so the editor in chief quit, and everything coming out is like sounding like this is not going to work out. Like they're intentionally trying to make the company crash so they can sell it off. And I don't fully understand the private equity scam, but it sounds like that's what they're trying to do, is like gut it for, you know, money.
Now, when you say focus on guides, you mean like strategy guides for games?
I assume that's what they mean, because I hear about this a lot from games writers, is that these websites have a big focus on guides and they don't really understand just how much work goes into them. And so the quote that I heard is that they're like, we want to do 50 guides a week, which is just not possible.
Yeah, no, like,
there's not even that many games coming out a week.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Fuck.
And you know,
maybe
what?
It was a month, but either way, that's still a lot.
And you know what? It's definitely some like weirdo who they have monitor like the traffic on the websites, and they see that way more people go to like their like guide section just from Googling, like, how do you open the door in Elden Ring or something like that?
And this is what's absurd, is that the editor-in-chief who quit is part of their leaving process. They kind of aired some of the, you know, the stuff that normally isn't shared with people. And they're like, the guides aren't even our most searched thing. They're like, that's not even what's bringing in the traffic. They're like, why? Like, the whole thing is just top to bottom doesn't make any sense to anybody outside of, again, like JP said, whoever these fucking money people are.
Jeez.
What a shame.
Yeah, it's I've started reading Kotaku again. I've had a love-hate relationship with them over the years because, you know, a lot of what they put out is fluff. Obviously, it's not all their fault because they have idiots telling them what to write.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's also like, there's not a lot of like big mainstream gaming sites that are as consistent as they are, and so I would just go to them.
You know, it's going to be a sad day because, like, what are weirdo reactionary gamers gonna? Point to get mad at?
Somebody posted this tweet that really summed up the experience of being a games writer. And they said that one day they were tasked with writing an article about whether this game had crossplay or not. And the answer was no, but they had to find out how to turn that into an article.
Wow. Gross.
Yeah. Kyle, you wanted to talk about Delicious and Dungeon. I'm not watching this show, but I've heard that the last few episodes were pretty narrative heavy, so I guess if anybody's watching that and wants to avoid spoilers, skip this section, because I know some other people were intentionally not covering the recent episodes.
Well, yeah, I actually kind of want to talk about, just because I felt that when we were talking about it on the last episode, ironically, I was enjoying it kind of week to week, but I hadn't necessarily had that click moment where I kind of got what it was like, its kind of energy was being put towards, if that makes sense. And then right after, because I think episode 8 had just been released, and then episode 9 hit, and it all clicked for me. Because I think up until now, like, is it fair to say, Noel, that episodes 1 through 8 feel very much like a monster slash, like, meal of the week?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, it definitely feels like that. It feels like, yeah, you're doing meal of the week, and you're also like getting to know the initial four, as far as Leos, like, Marcel, Chilchuck, and Senshi.
And I do think that really works, but it doesn't necessarily feel like you kind of like it's necessarily coalescing, right? It's like it's still simmering, right? It hasn't become a full broth.
Oh my god!
you know, so it's developing, but then episode 9 for me. Okay, so maybe the best way to put it is that up till now, it feels to me like every episode has kind of been a fanfic of an RPG kind of staple of sorts, right?
I'm trying to remember, is episode 9 the one where they break down, like, how the dungeon
No, episode 9 is the one after where they're trying to... Marcel's hurt, and they kind of have to do some stuff with the gnomes, and then at the end, she comes up with her own plan to get her mana back.
Okay, yeah.
That's episode 9.
Okay, I understand, because, yeah, that is a very good episode, and it does really break up any sense of monotony you would have.
Yeah, no, but I guess the way to put it is that I think up till now, it feels to me like they took a look at kind of, like, common RPG and kind of, like, fantasy, like, scenarios, and they're like, let's write, like, a fun little story about it, right?
Oh, like, yeah, it definitely feels very, like, D&D, like...
Yeah, and that's cool. Like, I like that they're kind of narrativizing, you know, or adding their own little spin to these kind of common stories. Like, I would not be surprised at all if in the next dozen episodes we have an episode about finding, like, wall chicken a la Castlevania or something. You know what I mean? Like, that just seems like the kind of thing where it comes up and I'd be like, of course they're doing an episode on that. It has to be. And you just see, you know, Laios be like, wall chicken. And then the dwarf goes, ah, yes, but you got to be careful. Then Chilchuck says, like, hey, there's traps around the wall. Don't eat it.
Don't just, like, eat the wall chicken.
Like, that's the kind of show it is, right? And and I was liking that, but I didn't necessarily, like, kind of get what it was going for. But then in that episode when, you know, kind of they do this little fun side adventure. And then at the end, you know, when kind of their hope seems lost and Marcel, it sounds like she's about to be sent up to the surface and not going to be able to continue the journey with them. She finally like goes all in, right? Because previously she'd been avoiding any kind of engagement, active engagement with the food, you know, just kind of like if you make it and I kind of like don't think about it when I take that first bite, then I taste and it's food and then I can do it.
Whereas yeah, because like the running joke would be that they decide on what they're going to eat. She's going to be like, oh, I'm not eating that. And then she just like does the slow lean in with the spoon and she's just like, oh no, this is actually pretty good.
You got any more of those tacos?
Yeah.
That's exactly the vibe, right? But after, when she has to come up with a plan to get her magic back and she goes, wait, like that spirit, that like, oh, that Undine that almost killed me, like what if we cook that and I eat it? Because that's a magical being and that will replenish my mana. And, you know, it's a really fun bit. Like the animation is great of the two dwarves, like having to use the two mithril cooking pots as a shield to like contain it and cook it. And it's really fun, but it's the moment after where she where she is the one who sits down and is like, you know, seasoning the meat and kind of kneading it and is like making the meal herself. And it's showing the whole process. And I finally clicked that what I think is so great about this series is that in general, I think that it says like, yes, you can be like this party who's just kind of like going back and forth and they're getting the money, right? You can be like this kind of surface level. I just enjoy this on a sword and sorcery, you know, like think about a video game, right? Like in the beginning, you see the graphics and it's like, wow, look at this place. But eventually, you know, after you've died 12 times, you're just kind of like, all right, I'm going to go to this skeleton. He's going to drop the herb. And I'm going to use that to, you know, it's like really just like pure tactics. Like you don't care about anything. It's all just window dressing for what matters, quote unquote, the gameplay. And then here it's saying that, no, like if you take your time, if you slow down, if you engage with the piece and you can, and especially like creatively, I think there's something about it with the way that it shows the process of the cooking and how that's just kind of like one way in which they're engaging with the dungeon.
Right.
And how it's bringing them like connection and understanding and, you know, just like deepening the experience basically. And I feel like that's what the show is doing. And it's all challenging us, the audience, to do it, not just in this show, but kind of, especially with video games, I feel that it's kind of like a bit of a like throw down the gauntlet of just like do better players, do better as an audience of just you should be actively engaging with this thing.
Yeah, get it together, gamers.
I don't know, but also like it this is the so here's the funny thing is it for me it made me so I was during quarantine I was playing a lot of games by myself and I was taking a lot of like notes, but because I was playing different games my notes were different, so like I would be playing a kind of like an old school Dragon Quest. And I was doing a lot of handmade maps, you know? And then I was playing FF7 and my notes were not maps because it's, you know, that game, you're not necessarily getting lost on where to go, but I was taking a lot of notes like on camera angles and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And after this episode aired, I was trying to find my Final Fantasy VII notes and I found all my old notes and I just finding these like sheaves of paper and these like, you know, all over my room because I couldn't find them right away, the one I wanted. So I ended up finding everything on accident. And it was so like wonderful that at the end of it that, you know, like even though I played these games so long ago, like I have these physical leftovers and kind of like, of you know, of I get to see where my own footsteps, you know, kind of where I was and what my headspace was at. And I was so grateful to have them and have these kind of not just, to, you know, not like I just beat the game and it's done. And, you know, it's like, it's in my head. It was like, no, like I have this physical thing. And I feel like that's also what this show is about. I think that it wants us to go beyond just engaging. I think it wants us to engage with something like in a creative way. And that's why I think that it's important that again, like there, she's physically, you know, kneading the, you know, like the meat and kind of like massaging it and making sure it's tender. And then when she cooks it and when you see the reaction of the dwarf, right, who is basically for this episode, the one who's visiting, the female dwarf, you see her reaction of just, she turns into Marcial, right? Of just like, they're eating these monsters. Like, right, what have they been refused to? And it's just, and when she eats it though, she just like Marcial, she goes like, oh, like it's food. And she, you know, in that way, all of the gnomes and other characters in quote unquote her party are looking at her kind of askance, like, what are you doing? And she's like, no, like, I get it now. Like, I ate it and I was a part, you know, a participant. And now, like, I've gotten at least some small part of that understanding. And so then, I guess, to push it later, in these last couple episodes, they were doing the more narrative stuff with this dragon. They finally caught up to it. But in the buildup, it's so great because we have a whole episode of them, like, dealing with, we have to get through these slimes and they have to make this frog skin leather armor.
Right, yeah.
To get through. And there's great character moments, like when Marcial, she has this, like, she doesn't want to wear it because it's ridiculous. And all the characters, they go, convene and they're whispering, like, how are we going to do this? And they whisper.
Like, what if we tell her she looks cute?
And they tell her that, and she does it, and she just is wearing it, and they're like, wow, look at how great you look. And she is not, like, believing a word of it. She knows they're lying through their teeth. But at the same time, she's still doing it. And I don't know, it's great character work. But then, you know, again, to that process, right, when they finally do start the dragon, they're kind of like, oh, we don't have enough party members, our gear's not right. I don't know how we're going to do this. But then they start to do the plan, and you see them drawing the maps like it's Etrian Odyssey or something, you know, and they're kind of like filling out their map and getting the actual details, and they're planning it. And it just felt to me like, I don't know if it's because of the, if this is due to the mangaka being, because it's, isn't it Ryoko Kui?
Yeah, that's her name.
But she's a female mangaka. And I just feel that where like these, a lot of dudes look at this and they, you know, they, I don't know if you could say that they're just spellbound by the sword and sorcery aspect. And they're like, I just want to smash stuff and I want to get gold and I don't know, drink ale. And they're just like the quote unquote, like big bits. But whereas I feel that she's really focused on, again, the craft and the process and kind of looking at this whole thing and finding a lot of things, a lot of details to like.
You could be onto something. Cause yeah, I do feel like I do see that difference when it comes to male mangaka writing fantasy and female mangaka writing fantasy.
Yeah, it's just somehow both deeper and broader, and I am such a fan of it. Highly, highly recommend Delicious Invention.
I will have to put this on my list of anime that I won't watch.
Thank you, JP. That means so much.
Not because I don't want to, but because I forget to watch everything.
So what was your favorite dish so far?
Oh, there's so many good dishes. I mean, I do love that Undine, just because like we get to see so much of it. But I also did... what was it? The snails is really good.
Oh, like the living armors?
Because I love that one, because that's the one where it's not always successful. Because a lot of their dishes are just like, it's wonderful, like, you're such a great cook. But in that one, like, the one that Laos is looking forward to the most, he just drinks it, and he goes like, it tastes like sweaty helmet.
Ew.
I shouldn't have stewed it like an oyster in the helmet.
Gross.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds very good. I have just been so... I don't even know if I want to say disenfranchised. I think it's... I've been very busy, and it's just hard to get excited about anime with everything that's happening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I get
like,
that.
I was telling somebody on Blue Sky, like, the last con I went to, I just felt like, why am I even here? Like, I still love anime, but... just the corporate hell that we're living in makes it really hard to get excited about shows.
Yeah. When you go to an anime con, it's like you have all these corporate booths and then like a recruiting station.
Oh my God.
It's like, oof. They're like, hey, and kids, you want to be like the Survey Corps in what's it called? Attack on Titan.
Well, and you know, not to turn this into a big rant, but like Crunchyroll can't even be bothered to show up to some of these cons now because they know they don't have to. Like, we're already subscribed. Why would they come advertise?
Right.
And I saw somebody saying, like, you know, they used to make big deals about, like, voice actor announcements, and now they don't. And it's like, they don't really do much marketing at all because they know that we'll do it for them.
Right.
Anyway, let's talk about video games. I have not had a whole lot of time to play video games, but the little times that I have, I've been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. It is excellent. Are either of you playing Rebirth?
I am making my way through Remake. Because, like I said, it took me a while to warm up to that enough to play it.
I wasn't sure if you misspoke earlier, but okay. That. And I know, Kyle, you said you still haven't played the original, so you're probably not playing Rebirth.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be right behind Noelle. So it's not right away because I'm playing another game quickly before, but I am. Sure. It's going to be happening very soon.
So I'll make this, I guess, abundantly clear. Like, it's a remake of a 25-whatever-year-old game. It's going to be very difficult for me to spoil anything, so I wouldn't worry too much about that. Obviously, there are big story beat changes in these. None of those have really happened so far, so you have nothing to worry about in terms of spoilers. You know, if you played the original or if you're familiar with the original, it's so far Rebirth is just a modern day version of that. Obviously, there's, you know, a lot more character interaction and the cities are bigger and there's side quests. But so far, I'm 30 hours in and there haven't been any big narrative changes like there were in the first game. And that's kind of been the biggest thing that I've noticed about Rebirth is that they took, at least I assume, they took the criticism that they got from Remake and they did a little bit of course correction.
Okay.
Because in Remake, there were these little, like, ghost guys that would come around and fuck your shit up if it tried to get too different from the original. Hmm. And a lot of people complained about that because they just wanted a one-to-one remake. Which I respect, and also, like, I just don't care. I had fun playing the game. I didn't think it was perfect, but I had fun. If anything, I thought it was a little too long. Rebirth is a better version in every way so far, except the character, not the character, the weapon upgrades. I don't like how they're handling weapon upgrades.
That's interesting that you said it was too long, because, like, from what I had heard, don't they end Remake? Don't they end, like, before you even leave Midgar?
Yeah, the game ends as, I think it ends in front of Midgar. Like, the Rebirth opens up and you're in, what is it called, Dali? Okay. Whatever the next town is. And Dali, I think, is Final Fantasy IX.
Okay. I just think that's interesting because, like, in the original game, I don't even think that's like an hour in before you leave Midgar.
Yeah, it's like 3 to, well, if you're Kyle, 20 hours. It's a very short part of the game, and they turned it into a 50-hour game or whatever. Right. And for the most part with Remake, that didn't bother me. It was the end of the game that I started to get fatigued. Because you go, it's like you go and you save Red 13. Well, maybe you don't save him because you don't know he exists. You find him. And you have to, like, save Aerith. And I found the Midgar, or the Shinra factory, whatever, part at the end to just be long and dragging. And I was not having fun. But overall, I enjoyed Remake. Rebirth, so far, I just got to Mount Coral, which is where Barrett is from.
Oh, so is that where you fight the guy, the other guy with the gun hand?
Yeah, sort of. You fight him after Golden Saucer.
Hmm.
Golden Saucer, I believe, is next. I'm trying to remember the order of things because I haven't been to Cosmo Canyon yet. and I'm pretty sure that is in disc one. Rebirth goes to the end of disc one, so
okay.
You know the bit with Aerith and Sephiroth for those who have played the game.
All right, so like, how is this going to work for the rest of the game? Because for the rest of the series, because isn't this supposed to be a trilogy?
Yeah, my understanding is that they're going to wrap up the game in the next installment. So this is kind of where all like the goofy stuff happens, and it's great.
Right, yeah.
And they've added a lot more goofiness.
Because you have Cosmo Canyon. Do you do the thing where like you command the army to defend that hill?
Sort of. I haven't done a ton in that town. You do go there, but in the, what do you call it? In the DLC intermission, you do that. They turned it into a mini game that you can like go and play against people. Cool. So that does exist, but it's done in a different way. Now, whether that is going to exist in Rebirth, it's unclear at this point, because I know that you go back to that place later on in the original game, because you go there, you play that mini game, but then you have to come back and like do something else with them.
Right, yeah.
So I've been there once to deliver money to like one of their leaders. You have to escort a puppy to I forget what it's called. It's like the Mount Condor or something.
Yeah, I think it is Mount Condor.
But so one thing that's really interesting to me about this, and I've seen a lot of people say this, is they somehow took what a lot of people are calling an Ubisoft RPG. I haven't played a lot of those, so I don't fully understand the reference, but they made an Ubisoft RPG fun. Because you just go around and like hit checkpoints to like open stuff up on your map.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's very like Ubisoft core.
But I'm having a lot of fun doing it because just like the character interactions are really fun. Like as you're wandering around, they'll talk to each other sometimes. And, you know, some of these side quests are just like very silly. Like at one point, there's a group of bandits who you have to chase around for like an hour or so. And you can't complete one of these like just optional side quests until you like defeat them and convince them not to be bad guys anymore. What else? There's a side quest where you have to ride a Segway around town for 4,000 kilometers or something, or 4,000 meters.
You know, it's hilarious because you can ride a Segway in Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, that's what I was like, this sounds like my time in Costa de Sol. Costa de Sol, you get to play Rocket League with Red 13 as Red 13. You have to go on this like silly quest to get a bikini for Tifa. And there's this guy that tells you to go take pictures of mountains and stuff. It's very fun. The battle system is more or less the same as the previous game. They've made a few tweaks, none so intricate that I can remember enough to tell you what the differences between the first two games are. I think they like added more team-up moves, or maybe they didn't exist in the first game. I can't remember. I played Remake 4 years ago.
It sounds like they made Final Fantasy 14, no, 15 fun.
Yeah. there's a lot of Chadley. Take that, you know, good or bad. He is so much in this game to the point that I would not be surprised if he was a hidden boss.
Who is a Chadley? Chadley
is
from the original game?
No, he's from Remake. He's this little guy that lets you do like time trials, and he's also how you get all the summons. So it's possible you just haven't met him yet. He's like a little android that works for Shinra, but for some reason he's your friend.
Ah.
And that's why I think he's going to be a bad guy, because he's a cop. Like, he's just this little AI guy that you tell everything to. Like, there's no way this guy isn't a cop. But you get all of your summons from him, and you get a lot of extra experience. And he's also the one that gives you the like checkpoint missions. So the reason the checkpoint mission stuff, the Ubisoft stuff that people are calling it, the reason why that stuff is really important is because they changed how upgrades work in this game. And it's like kind of a love-hate thing. I enjoy doing the missions themselves, but I don't like the change to the upgrade tree. So you go around and there's like these towers that you have to activate, and they'll show you where additional little things you can do are. Like, hey, there's a slime. Go try to beat that slime in 90 seconds and stagger it. And then you'll get points from doing all these things, and that's how you do your upgrades. And that part doesn't bother me, but I thought that the way they handled the skill tree in the first game was better.
I see.
But, you know, I'm enjoying, you know, exploring the world and doing these time trials and activating these towers. So I don't have too much to complain about. I think that the summon fights are really hard. So far, I haven't been able to beat any of the summons and get them. But I'm also just not good at video games. So maybe that's just a me problem. I'm trying to think. I'm speaking very generally about the game because it's like we all know the story of Final Fantasy VII.
He's like, oh no.
I don't have much to comment on.
Turns out my mother's an alien.
I think that this game's doing a really good job of making the story accessible because I did not really understand what it was about when I played it in middle school. I know that there was apparently some translation problems. The vocalizers didn't want us to know what Final Fantasy VII was about.
The vocalizers, they didn't want us to know that Genova was female. They wanted us to think she was not binary.
Yeah, I just, like, there was a lot of things that confused me about the game, and it's a lot more clear with that, with things that were maybe too ambiguous originally. Like, how Cloud is, you know, also infected and may turn into a Genova creepy guy, and how he's also a clone of Sephiroth.
Yep. And also how he's a big old liar.
Yeah, and like how he took over, this is probably all spoiling people that never played the original, how he took over Zack or whatever, but like that, none of that was clear to me when I played the original. I only know this from listening to podcasts. I was too busy doing the punching game and the snowboarding game.
Yeah.
And
oh, man, can you snowboard in this?
I'm not there yet, but okay. I also think that that's going to be in the next game.
Oh, no.
Because I feel like snowboarding was after Aerith. A-A-A, not B-A. Because I feel like you end up in that snow area, and I'm pretty sure that's the start of disc two, sorry. Although maybe you can snowboard in Golden Saucer.
Yeah, I feel like you could snowboard in Golden Saucer.
I think Kyle is dead. Kyle's had a power outage.
Right, yeah.
And he's having trouble getting back on. So this is just like last time when we lost you, except it's Kyle. My bad. Last time was my fault. I thought you had much more time than you did. I misremembered you saying that you were free until 3, but it must have been until 1, because I think that's when you left.
Right.
But yeah, Final Fantasy Rebirth is great. I don't really know what else to say about it. You're going to like this one.
So are Yuffie and Vincent in this? Because I feel like I've seen a little bit of them, but it seems like it is mostly Cloud, Barrett,
Yuffie for sure is in it. I have gotten to the part where you can play as Yuffie and she joins your party. It's very limited so far. She'll like run off on her own. What's really fun is at one point you get to control her and the game turns into Prince of Persia.
Nice.
And you have to like scale walls and do like hookshot stuff. Vincent, I'm unclear. I think he's in it, but I read, and this is, you know, talking about making guides, underpaid, they don't pee enough, underpaid people making guides. I read a weapon guide for each character, and Vincent wasn't on that list. So either they didn't get to him, or he's not in the game. I don't know.
Oh, man, we need Vincent in the game.
I feel like he has to be.
Everyone loves Vincent. I want to be able to turn into a Frankenstein.
But I'm only, you know, maybe halfway through. This is supposed to be a pretty long, long one. I mean, it's the biggest part of the game.
All right.
Let me think. What have I done? So it opens up and you're in Calm. So you do the Nibelheim flashback. That's actually what the demo is. Which I think I talked about in the last episode. You go to Junon, which is pretty cool. They made Junon really fun. And there's a dolphin mini game, which almost kind of felt like an old PS2, like riding a jet ski video game.
Well, yeah, couldn't you ride dolphins in the original too?
I mean, you could ride the dolphin in that's how you got up to the above Junon, but there wasn't like a ride the dolphin and have fun mini game.
Okay.
In this one, you get to control the dolphin and like jump through hoops and stuff.
Cool.
What else? Costa de Sol is a lot of fun. There's a lot of mini games in Costa de Sol. Lots of chocobo stuff. What's funny is they animated Red 13 riding a chocobo. Because, like, your party just follows behind you the whole time. So anything you do, they have to figure out a way to make Red 13 do it as well. So he can climb ladders and ride chocobos and go down fire poles. It's really silly. He can climb up mountains. He's even kind of snarky about it. Because Aerith is like, man, climbing mountains sure is hard. And he's like, don't worry. If you get tired, you can just ride on my back. I'll carry you up the mountain. I've done this before. You fight the giant, like, snake lizard guy in the swamp. So, you know, it's all the same story beats. Mm-hmm. It's just bigger. And there's a lot of side quests. The biggest thing that I didn't like in the beginning, which kind of grew on me, is there's this game called Queen's Blood, which is not to be confused with Queen's Blade.
Right.
It's just like another card game, and they make you play it a lot.
Oh.
But it gets easier the more you play it. But in the beginning, I just like I have trouble when I get bombarded with rules for card games, and they're immediately like, all right, now play it. And so I really struggled to complete some of the side quests. But now I kind of have an idea. I don't fully understand all the rules, but I have a better understanding. I have enough that I won the tournament. There's a tournament on the boat to Costa de Sol. But yeah, really, really great game. The, what do you call it? The Shinra troop thing where you have to do the march from the original game to get points.
Mm-hmm.
That is so hard in this game, but they make it really funny because, like, you know, you have to go find all your troops and they follow you around as you're looking for the other guys. So at one point you have like 20 people following you in like a military line. I don't know what the word is, like military formation. They're just marching around town with you while you're looking for your other guys. The mini game itself is fun. It's just difficult.
Oh, okay.
Because I did the hardest difficulty and that was a mistake, but you know, anyway, you should play it. It's the best. If you like the first one, it's just a better version of that game.
Nice.
What else did I have on here? You said you watched Sandland, but I wonder if we should wait for Kyle to come back. because that will segue into Akira Toriyama. Ken Ganashira versus Baki.
Oh, Grappler yes.
Baki got announced.
I'll be there.
That's going to be pretty cool.
Popcorn, see what's going on. My only thing is, like, this just reminded me that, like, man, Ken Ganashira could have looked so much better.
Yeah. I never watched it because I didn't want to watch this, like, 3D CG fighting show.
See, like, it's not even just the 3D CG, because 3D CG is bad, but what they also do is they cut out a lot of, like, the side stuff that's meant to, like, make these fights significant.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like, they really try to break it down to, like, oh, it's just a fighting tournament. It's just an MMA tournament. But you don't need to worry about, like, the reasons these guys are fighting or anything like that. Just know that these are the brackets. It's like, they cut out whole characters, too.
Oof.
I don't know if they brought them back as the show went on, because, yeah, I only watched the first season, but, yeah.
I read some of the manga, but I don't think it was available at the time. I don't know if it's available now.
So
the scans that I was working with, like, there was a bunch of chapters that didn't load, so I just stopped reading.
That sucks. Yeah, I read the original manga, and then there's a sequel called Kengan Omega, which is, like, I don't know. It's all available on Kamaki, but Kamaki is such a garbage platform.
Well, that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if there's too many details on this. I assume it's going to be like a 45-minute thing or
right. Maybe
a movie. There's no way it's a 13-episode series.
Right. But
I would welcome it.
It's like when Netflix did Devilman versus Cyborg 009.
Oh, I didn't know they did that. That sounds fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a fun little, I guess you would call it an OVA. I'm not too sure.
Yeah. What else? I could talk about this manga I've been reading. I'm like halfway through the first volume. It's called Ado or Ado, A-D-O. Well, it's A-D-O, so I don't really know. But I got it just because I thought the cover was good. It has like a kind of gritty cyberpunk-ish looking guy with a plant arm on the cover. And on the back, it was like four fans of Akira. I thought, okay, I kind of like Akira. This should be fun. And it is literally just Akira, which is fine by me because I don't know how many people have ripped off Akira. Probably more than one, but I haven't read those. And this came out just a couple years ago. So this is like a modern, I'm just going to remake Akira manga. Stop me if you've heard this before. It opens up with a little boy that escaped a testing facility that is doing these tests on kids to give them latent psychic powers.
Right.
We live in a cyberpunk world where some things are better and some things are worse, and corporations, and there's a police state and whatever. Right. And then the military has to capture this little boy. And he's hanging out with the main character, who's just a hoodlum. Sounds exactly like Akira, because yeah. It is.
Does he make out with the school nurse in order for her to give him pills?
Not yet.
Like in Akira?
That does not come up. It's fun. I've gotten to the point where the police suicide squad with their, or maybe a more apropos comparison would be the Cyber City Oedo, one of the other kids. And so he has to go capture the little boy. He just blew up a hostess. Because wow. She, yeah. It's fun. I mean, if you like that type of story, I've had a good time reading it, but I, you know, don't expect your mind to be blown. If you've seen Akira, so far it's not offering anything else new, but that doesn't bother me. I knew what I was getting myself into. And the art's pretty good.
Sick.
You know, sometimes you want to watch Spy Family, sometimes you want to watch Buddy Daddies. It's okay. What else? I'm trying to think. I don't know. It's been a while since Kyle's been gone. I wonder if he's still coming back. It's been almost 15 minutes. So, Ninja Kamui. That's, I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
I watched Ninja Kamui. Have you been watching this one?
I watched the first episode and I did not go back to it.
Yeah, the first episode's bad.
Okay.
So, there's that to understand. I don't know why. And I love that they, every commercial calls it Ninja Kamui, but it's clearly Kamui.
Right.
I don't know what the name means. I assume Kamui means something very specific in Japanese.
Well, I believe Kamui is like some kind of sacred robes and shit.
I'm going to look it up. Because it's not his name. The main character's name is Higen.
Right, right.
A spiritual or divine being. So it's spiritual ninja. Ninja spiritual.
Yeah, like Dagger of Kamui. There we go.
Yeah. Oh, Kamui is an Ainu mythology thing, which makes sense because Dagger of Kamui is about an Ainu.
Right. And then you got Golden Kamui.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, the first episode of Ninja Kamui is not great. It suffers from too many montages and fridging the main guy's wife, which is a term I recently learned. What was it? Was it X-Men or whatever?
No, it was Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Yeah.
It's from the comics where he comes home and his wife is in a fridge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a reference to when you kill a woman character just to progress a male character's plot.
Right.
I don't know how else you could have done this story without doing that because it's a revenge story.
Right.
It wouldn't exist if you didn't do that. I mean, I guess
like
they could have.
The opening is like a hard rock song where the guy's just singing about revenge.
Like, I guess they could have just gone after him and she could have just not existed and that could have been his revenge. Like, hey, you tried to kill me. They could have, like, blown up his house or something. I don't know. But, like, I knew that was going to happen because that's literally, like, what's in the commercial. It's like, Higen's wife has been murdered and now he has to fight ninjas in Ninja Scroll battles. And the problem isn't so much that it was a cliche setup, it just wasn't well executed.
Oh man, are they Ninja Scroll ninjas?
Sort of, sometimes.
Oh, okay.
They've turned into Tiger and Bunny ninjas, which is weird. The biggest complaint I have, honestly, other than the first episode not being great, but it can come down to the same problem that I have with the series as a whole, which is a problem with Adult Swim's anime across the board, is the pacing. And it is because, you know, they're probably not given enough money to make what should be a longer show. It was a problem with Fena. It was a problem with Housing Complex C. What other Adult Swim anime did I watch? I guess the Fooly Cooly had a other problem in that they existed. I didn't watch Shenmue. I heard that was really good. But it's the pacing is, it's either way too fast or way too slow.
Right.
And the first episode has the too slow problem in that they do like fully 5 minutes worth of montages about how much this guy loves his wife. But they happen so, like, in rapid succession that it's just like, all right, can we just kill his family so he can move on? So this guy has been in ninja hiding because the ninjas sold out to the government, apparently. And he didn't like that. So he...
I remember I watched at least the beginning of episode 2. Am I to understand that, like, what happened was the ninjas started to work internationally because of 9/11?
Maybe.
Okay.
I didn't catch the 9/11 part because I was playing guitar at the same time.
Okay.
But yeah, the ninjas start to franchise and they work for Elon Musk.
Oh, gross.
why. There's like, you know, your typical rich billionaire guy.
Right. It's like an
obnoxious billionaire guy, but
it's like in Knives Out too.
What's funny is he doesn't really have a big role in the story, but he's like implied to have a bigger role, but the ninjas seem to be in more control. It feels like the ninjas are using him more than he's using the ninjas.
Okay.
But he runs this like tech company that makes robots and makes, you know, other types of like crazy high tech gear. But they really do not respect him at all, which I think is kind of funny. But once you get past the first episode where like the first 15 minutes are kind of a drag, which is a bummer because the rest of it's fun. It's not like, you know, I wouldn't call this like a 10 out of 10, but this was very clearly made by somebody that grew up watching Ninja Scroll and wanted more Ninja Scroll.
You know, that's exactly what I said about that. If you remember that,
Yasuke?
Yes.
Yeah. If you liked Yasuke, which nobody did.
Yeah, nobody did.
I really liked Yasuke.
They were expecting a completely different show.
They wanted Shigarui, and they got...
not even that. I think what they wanted is what that new Netflix, that new FX show.
Oh, Shogun?
Yeah, Shogun. They wanted Shogun.
I've heard that's excellent, and I haven't watched it yet. But yeah, once you get past the first episode, it just turns into Ninja Fight, the show, which is great. The pacing is a little nutty. It's hard to follow sometimes, but just every episode he's fighting a superpowered ninja. And that's what I want from my ninja show. I don't need anything else.
Right.
They've kind of gotten away from the more grounded super ninja in these last two episodes, and now the ninjas have power armor, which I don't love, but I can live with it. I can live, laugh, love.
You can live, laugh. You can live, laugh, and love with power armor.
There's this little tiny guy with a giant head that jerks off to people dying, which is very Itchy the Killer.
Oh my gosh, this just sounds incredible. The more,
I that's what I like. If you didn't like the first episode but wanted more ninja fighting stuff, I think it's worth watching the second episode. It finds its footing. It's more like the back 7 minutes of the first episode. That's what the rest of the show is more like.
Oh, okay. 'Cause
that's what I wanted. So the last 7 minutes of episode one is him just fighting a ninja that has like a very Yoshiaki Kawajiri character design.
He very much does. Yes.
And it's great. And, I don't really have a lot else to say about it because it's not story heavy. It's just, hey, you like ninjas fighting? Cool. You'll Here's probably ninjas like this. Fighting. The one part that's not good is the part where ninjas aren't fighting. there's this cop in it that he becomes friends with that's really funny because, like, I don't know if it's just that he's so over, he's too old for this shit, or they just got the most bored voice actor, but he reacts so nonchalantly to everything that happens. So...
this isn't his first time dealing with ninjas.
I guess so. Because even when they're like, hey, it turns out that murder that we investigated in episode one, turns out it was ninjas. And he's just like, goddamn ninjas. he literally is like, you know, 2 weeks from retirement. But in the second episode, ninjas attack a hospital and, like, slaughter a ton of people. And he shows up and he just says, like, oh, man, this is messed up. Right. It's just, like, no emotion in his voice. He's the best guy. I think I've seen people complain about his voice acting, but it's grown on me.
Oh, okay.
I think Kyle is gone.
Yeah.
He just said his internet is down.
Right.
Oh, bummer. So, that's nice. Yeah, I like it. The episode 7 is out tonight at midnight. We're recording this Saturday. So, yeah, they come out every Saturday at midnight on Toonami or next day on Max.
Right.
At least until Zaslav decides that he wants to pull the plug.
Exactly. Friggin' Zaslav. We could have had season 4 of Close Enough. Bastard.
So you watched Sandland.
Yeah, Sandland. Yeah, man. It's so I think 7 episodes of it are up on Hulu.
Oh, Jesus. This came out of nowhere for me. I didn't even know they were making an anime. Yeah, I thought they were making a movie, and then I saw people complaining that they didn't like the rap intro for what I assumed was the movie.
Ooh. Yeah, it's so interesting how, like, because the game has been getting, like, a significant amount of coverage, but I feel like this anime has not, and it just seems weird considering that Toriyama just died.
Yeah.
And this is like one of the last things he worked on before then. You would think it would be getting more press, but yeah, no.
Yeah, the only thing I've seen people do is comment on the opening theme song, which I've not seen.
I really like the opening.
I've heard that it's good, and I've seen racist people say that it's bad, so I assume that it's good.
Get out of here. Yeah, there's a part where they play video games, and then they dance.
That sounds great to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sandland. This was originally a manga that Toriyama did, I want to say, years ago. I forget exactly when. I just know this was actually, like, one of the first manga I ever read.
Yeah, well, it was in it was in monthly Shonen Jump.
Right.
When we first got Shonen Jump in America, it was one of the manga in there. And I didn't know, you said it was only 14 or 12 chapters? I didn't know that. I thought it was weird that it disappeared immediately from Shonen Jump.
Yeah, it's from 2000. But yeah, it really is like super short. It's like 16 chapters, and as far as I remember, it just kind of ends with the main kid Beelzebub. He fights like a grasshopper monster, and then they find a bunch of water.
Yeah, I don't remember anything other than the character designs, and I just know that it was one day it just wasn't in the magazine anymore, and I just forgot about it. So I very well could have read the entire thing and just not realized it.
Right, of course. But yeah, it's about like this dystopian future where, you know, everything's a desert and there's scarce water around. And the only people who have access to water are the king and his like royal capital. And that's about it. And they got demons roaming around. So, what was it? Yeah. You have this sheriff in like an outpost town called Rao who hears about some legendary spring that's supposed to exist out there. So he goes to the demons and he tells them like, "Hey guys, can you help me out? Help me find this legendary spring. If you do, I'll give you a PlayStation 6.
Nice.
Which is a thing which it is funny in the actual first episode of this anime that happens, but they never bring up what it is. He just
wait.
Says,
so
like,
they say PlayStation 6 in the original manga.
They say PlayStation 6 in the original manga. In this, he just says, like, "Hey, I have this vintage game console," and he gives it to them, and they're like, "Oh, man, awesome," and they never say what it is.
Oh, God. Does that mean that Sandland is just around the corner?
Probably.
Fuck.
Yeah. We're one console generation away from the whole planet being a desert.
That is not outside the realm of possibility.
Right, of course. But yeah, so far the first episode is fun. I like I always liked the little demon guy, Beelzebub. I think he's very fun because he's just like a little like shitty kid, and I always like little shitty kid characters in shonen manga.
I just tried to look up Sandland on Wikipedia and I got a country. Fuck me.
Wait, hold up. Back up. Let me see this.
There we go. I found the video game at least.
Not to be confused with Sandland. Oh my god. Wow. Yeah.
Gotta hit that disambiguation button.
Sandland is a village in Lapa Municipality in Finnmark County, Norway. Wow.
Hmm. I found the actual Wikipedia, and yeah, it was only one volume long.
Right.
Well, that's that is fun, and I... Well, they just made a movie, too. I wonder if this is different from the movie.
I'm not too sure. I do know that, like, yeah, they're definitely doing more with this than they did in that original manga, because I... Even when I look at the promotional stuff, I'm like, there are characters here who were not in that original manga. Like, I'm seeing this girl with braids and, like, an angel, and I'm like, yeah, no, I don't remember those two.
Oh, I see. It says the first six episodes are... This is very Toriyama, actually. The first six episodes are essentially the movie. And then the... next seven episodes is a story that Toriyama wrote for the ONA.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that is a better segue than ever. Very sad news. I would be shocked if we're the first people telling you this.
Right.
But Akira Toriyama passed away at the beginning of March. This is probably one of the few times where a celebrity death actually, like, affected me.
Mm.
You know, it didn't, like, I don't know, like, ruin my day, or I don't know what to, like, you know, it's different than, like, if a dog or, like, a family member passed away, but I, like, kind of sat in silence for a while, and I didn't talk for the rest of the night.
Yeah, like, I did, like, a similar thing when I found out.
He was really young, too. He was 68 years old.
Exactly, yeah.
It said he passed away from an acute hematoma, which I have read is brain bleeding, that is potentially the result of an impact. But people have also said that it could be from overworking or from alcoholism.
Of course, yeah.
We don't have a ton of details, but very, very sad. Somebody put out a list of, like, all the things he inspired over the years. I don't know how accurate, like, you know, you read a thread on Twitter, you don't know if it's all true, but, like, right. People were saying that, like, Sonic the Hedgehog had a lot of Dr. Slump influence in it, and, like, obviously Final Fantasy VII has a lot of DBZ influence in the character designs. Dragon Quest wouldn't exist without him.
Right.
You know, Chrono Cross, Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he did that as well.
Yeah, and like without Dragon Quest, like I said, you have no Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth.
Yeah, it's very, very sad. I've never been the biggest fan of his stuff, but I've always had an appreciation for Dragon Ball.
Oh, it's, yeah, definitely.
Not my, you know, it was never my favorite, but I did just finally watch all of it.
Right, and I know... Ichiro Oda, who, you know, he draws One Piece, he put out a statement saying he's going on a bit of a hiatus for about 3 weeks. And he's just like, I'm trying to, like, focus on my health, just like the news about Toriyama has him thinking, like, yeah, nah, I need to prioritize my health above all else, which is, you know, so true.
Yeah, anime and manga, it's not an exaggeration to say that anime and manga would not be in the state it's in now if it wasn't for Akira Toriyama.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, so many things were inspired by Dragon Ball and Dr. Slump, and I don't know if he did anything other than those.
And also Sandland. Just, like, from the standpoint of just Western penetration...
Oh, for sure. Western fandom. Holy shit.
Yeah, I could have phrased it
Western
like that instead.
I'm going to look at his list. I'm a terrible fan in that.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Yeah, he did Dragon Ball and Dr. Slump, but those were like two career spanning works.
Exactly. Yeah. There's also like his little side projects. So there was Jaco, the space policeman.
Oh, yeah. I think I read that.
Right.
That was like a one shot.
Yeah. He had like a children's manga they wrote once called Kawa. It's about like a little vampire guy.
Nice. Yeah, the Wikipedia just says Dr. Slump, Dragon Ball, and then other works.
Yeah. So. I know like last year Viz had released like a compilation of his one shots. Yeah, the manga theater. And I'd been meaning to pick that up.
I think it's on the app. I think you can just read it.
Ah.
But yeah, he was very unique in that he would get hired to do character designs for other stuff a lot.
Mm-hmm, right. And I know I remember reading in an interview or something like how much he enjoyed just doing that. He enjoyed like working on video games a lot compared to manga.
Yeah. I guess if you make Dragon Ball Z, you don't really have to do anything else. You know, like that work was a consistent moneymaker until he passed away.
Right.
I know a lot of people, this really drove me nuts. It was like 2 days after it was announced and people were like, so is Dragon Ball Super going to continue or what? And everyone's like, wow, dude, like,
right.
Take a breath, like let people grieve. He's not even in the ground yet.
Right.
And I mean, he probably was because they didn't announce it for like 2 weeks after it happened. But the answer is no. It is not going to complete or continue, at least as of right now.
Like, as far as I heard, they're doing an indefinite hiatus.
Yes, that was just announced, I think, today or yesterday. So.
Right.
Maybe this is different being not a super big fan, but like, I don't even think Super needed to exist. So I think it's fine that it's just stopping. I thought that Dragon Ball Z could have just been the end.
I get you.
I don't know. I thought it was really weird that they made Super, but I know that there was a lot of fans of it.
Yeah, because like, and yeah, like we definitely have like a lot of Toriyama projects down the pipeline because there's Sandland happening. And then that new Dragon Ball game, Sparking Zero, is coming out. And then I know Dragon
Quest. They have a new anime.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Dragon Ball Daima?
Yeah, Dragon Ball Daima. That's happening as well. And then there's, I know Dragon Quest XII was announced. And we have not heard anything else about that since.
There was a really, not to give these people attention, but there was somebody on Twitter that's like, Vic Mignogna's winning now that Funimation doesn't have Dragon Ball anymore.
And oh, it's
like,
gross.
Well, there's a few things wrong with that statement. One, when somebody dies, that doesn't mean that their work automatically stops making money.
Right.
Or that the rights would automatically revert back.
Right.
But also, there was, probably 20 or 30 years where new Dragon Ball wasn't being made, and that was arguably when it was making the most money.
Exactly.
So it's like, just because Super is no longer in production doesn't mean they're going to stop making merchandise and re-releasing, you know, Blu-rays and, you know, like...
If anything, I wouldn't be surprised if they were in the pipeline to make, like, a bunch of re-releases of stuff.
Probably. They've been consistently making Dragon Ball since Dragon Ball came out. It's like Fist of the North Star.
Right.
It's never going to go away. I mean, you know, maybe in like 50 years, we might not be making Dragon Ball anymore. But in the current day, it's not like it's going to run out of stuff. If anything, we're in a renaissance of Toriyama work right now.
Right.
I don't know if I have anything else. I'm trying to think. Really, the only thing I've been doing is going to work and being very sleepy.
Hmm.
After almost a year of not working, it is wild going back to 60 hours a week and getting up super early every day. I know a lot of people have been saying to watch Bravern. I don't know a single thing about that show other than it's robots.
Oh my God, I love Bravern. Bravern is so great. I guess we'll talk about it next episode.
Maybe. I'll have to check it out now that I'm back home. I've been in a hotel most of this week because we were shooting, you know, pretty deep into Jersey.
Mm.
The movie that I'm on has been taking place almost exclusively outside. Mm. So I've been outside all day, every day for most of March. And a lot of it is in the woods. So I've been wearing boots and like tons of layers all month. My whole body hurts, but I have money again. So that's nice. Cool. But that's the Dead Rat Pizza podcast. I love how I was like, let's talk about more than anime. And then it's just an anime.
And then we were just anime.
Eventually we'll talk about something obnoxious. Like, I don't know, PsyOps. I spent a lot of time on Reddit. Oh, you know what? Somebody asked me to talk more about recording and songwriting. I won't go in depth about that right now, but I think maybe I will, when I actually remember that I have a podcast, I'll pick like a question off Reddit and we could talk about that. Because I spend a lot of time on audio Reddit now. But I just put out a new demo with my band. We are going to be going into the studio at the end of May, which is really exciting. So if you want to hear our song, you can go to Everything is Unfamiliar on Bandcamp. I believe it's everythingisunfamiliar.bandcamp.com. I think that's how their URL structure works.
Okay.
And you can hear our song. It's called My Furo Academia. I had thought about putting it at the end of the podcast, but you know, you're going to have a better time if you just go to the Bandcamp, because this podcast gets compressed pretty extremely through MP3, and it gets released in mono. So it's not going to be quite a pleasurable experience. But My Furo Academia, we're going to be recording it in the studio end of May, along with one other song. Should be a good time.
Sick.
That's all I got. That's all Kyle has, probably.
Yeah.
He said he hopes the rest of the podcast went well. But we'll see you next time, everybody.
Yep, see you next time.
Cheers.
Cheers.